Hey listeners, at 4pm on Sunday, September 1, we'll be doing a live recording at the Opera House as part of the Antidote Festival. The topic is the elected Morrison government's first 100 days. I'll be joined by Chief Political Correspondent David Crow, Senior Economics Correspondent Shane Wright, and Senior Writer Jacqueline Malley. It'll be a hoot. And if you come, you'll still have time to fit in an early drink by the harbour on the first evening of spring. What's not to love about that? There's a link to the Antidote tickets page in our show notes. I would love to see you there. It's a topic that invokes emotional and heated debate. A proposed bill to remove abortion from New South Wales's 119-year-old Crimes Act and instead regulate it with a standalone Healthcare Act is this week before the lower house.
I move that a bill be introduced for an act reforming the law relating to terminations of pregnancy and regulating the conduct of health practitioners in relation to terminations.
If it passes, it has to go to an upper house committee next week before a final vote. New South Wales is the only state or territory where abortion has not been decriminalised. The bill would allow abortions up until 22 weeks or after with the approval of two doctors. Opponents say the legislation allows women to have abortions right up until birth, while supporters say it gives women back their reproductive rights. Federal politicians even weighed in on this state issue.
But I don't believe that any person, any doctor, any parliament has the power today to declassify another person as less than human.
Chamber, this is a matter for the New South Wales Parliament. If I had a vote, I'd support the legislation. I think women do have a right to choose.
I'm Tori Maguire. This week on Please Explain, breaking down the abortion debate. So first today I'm joined by the state political editor at the Sydney Morning Herald, Alexandra Smith, and lawyer and co-founder of Women Vote, Maria O'Brien, to talk about the legal and political side of this development. Later I'll talk with Herald Health reporter Kate Orbison about things like access and affordability. Alex and Maria, welcome to Please Explain. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
I want to start with you, Maria. What does the New South Wales law currently say about abortion?
Currently, abortion is a crime under a 1900 piece of New South Wales legislation. And there is a carve out from that crime insofar as it refers to, in effect, an abortion being unlawfully procured or administered without any clarification of what that means. So it's very unclear and it lives in a criminal statute. And of course, sort of been there for now something approaching 119 years. So well overdue for some reform.
So it doesn't actually define what an unlawful abortion is?
No.
Right.
It's nope.
Is there any exceptions in it around the health of the mother or the well-being of the mother or the health of the baby?
No. In fact, why don't I just read it?
Yeah.
There's three sections in the Crimes Act of 1900 New South Wales, and they are as follows. Section 82, whosoever, being a woman with child, unlawfully administers to herself any drug or noxious thing, or unlawfully uses any instrument to procure her miscarriage, shall be liable to penal servitude for 10 years. No carve-outs in that.
No.
Section 83, whoever unlawfully administers to or causes to be taken by any woman, whether with child or not, any drug or noxious thing, or unlawfully uses any instrument or other means with intent in such cases to procure her miscarriage, shall be liable to penal servitude for 10 years. No carve-out there either. And section 84, whosoever unlawfully supplies or procures any drug or noxious thing, or any instrument or thing whatsoever, knowing that the same is intended to be unlawfully used with intent to procure the miscarriage of any woman, whether with child or not, shall be liable to penal servitude for life.
Right.
So these are pretty full on and without any carve out, except for the concept of unlawfully administering to or unlawfully procuring, which is not defined or clarified in the legislation. So
Okay. That's
at large. There have been some judicial pronouncements over time which have provided some further clarification, but obviously the legislation itself has not been amended.
Okay.
And the common law is perhaps less clear than a clear legislative provision would
okay.
be.
Okay. So, Alex, what does this bill propose to do to change this law?
Okay, so what this bill wants to do is to allow a termination of a pregnancy up to 22 weeks on request. Then post 22 weeks, it would require the consent of two doctors. So it's a fairly clear piece of legislation introduced by the independent MP Alex Greenwich. And what's really interesting about it is that it has 15 co-sponsors, which means 15 MPs from across the political spectrum have signed their name to the bill, including two government ministers, the Health Minister, Brad Hazzard, as well as the local government minister, Shelley Hancock. So what that shows, it has support, at least to some degree, from across the political divide.
So what this podcast is definitely not going to do is examine the arguments of just the two ideological camps of being opposed to abortion or being pro-choice. I want to stick to the law and the politics. Maria, are there any legal arguments against changing this? I mean, people are making legal arguments, but are there any of them coherent?
Look, I can't see why it wouldn't be desirable to codify and clarify the law in New South Wales, consistent with what has happened in various of the other states, including, of course, most recently and relevantly in Queensland. And that would protect women, it would protect medical professionals, and I think it's just generally desirable that there be clarity. I mean, a law that was enacted in 1900 by a room full of men is not necessarily going to be relevant and applicable in 2019, and certainly not, I would submit, in respect of the availability now of the medical termination in effect by drugs. I mean, these laws were not designed at a time when that was a reality. So I think it would be desirable on every level for there to be legal clarification of everybody's rights.
Alex, we've all heard some of the more conservative politicians who are opposed to abortion make their moral and religious arguments against law change. Is anyone making a legal argument against it or a legislative argument against it, or is the political debate really along ideological lines?
Yeah, it's interesting. It is really along ideological lines. There are some people who clearly point out the sort of views that Maria has made and said that there is no reason for a law made, you know, 119 years ago to still stand. But really, it has come down to largely people who are pro-choice and pro-life in the political debate, which is why it's become so heated. And it's almost drifted away from the intent of the legislation and become, you know, a very divided debate over a social issue that's always going to cause, you know, a lot of tension and division, I suppose.
So one of the more contentious things, particularly in the ideological debate, is the idea that with the consent of two doctors, women will be able to seek an abortion after 22 weeks. What are the doctors saying? What's the AMA and medical professionals saying about how that would come about?
Yeah, well, interestingly, that is seems to be the big sticking point. And there are some amendments around today that two senior ministers intend to put before the parliament to what they say, tighten that up. But just recently, this morning, the AMA and the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynaecologists have come out and said that they still believe that this proposed, the initial version of the bill, so the two doctors' consent is exactly what is required from a medical perspective. There is people arguing, well, what's a doctor? Could that just be somebody that doesn't have any expertise in gynaecology or obstetrics? But I think the AMA and the Royal College of Obstetricians are very confident and comfortable with the bill. I mean, the AMA was integral in the drafting of the bill. So I presume that they started from a place of where they were comfortable, and they don't see it needs to be changed in any way. And as I understand it, they don't support any amendments to the bill.
Okay. Maria, is there any federal jurisdiction over this area at all, or is it entirely a state matter?
It's overwhelmingly a state matter because it's both historically a criminal law matter and it's also obviously a health matter. I guess to the extent it lives in the federal domain, that would be around Medicare and funding of health services.
But the PBS providing the drugs.
But that clearly would have an impact, but primarily in terms of prosecuting people for crimes, that is a state issue. Mm.
Why then are so many federal politicians weighing in on this, do you think? Alex?
Well, I think because, going back to it's become this ideological argument and people feel so strongly about this. I can't remember a time in state politics where an issue has become so heated and there is so much anger between both sides. And I think that's why you've got people like the former Deputy Prime Minister Barnaby Joyce weighing in.
And the Home Affairs Minister,
yes,
Peter Dutton.
Yes, that's right, because they clearly have very strong positions on this. And that is understandable and fine, although, again, this really isn't a debate. It isn't a debate about whether you agree with abortion or you don't. It's about, you know, the laws around possible prosecution, but it's definitely drifted well beyond that.
Yeah. What are the churches saying? The Uniting Church broke ranks, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. So you have the churches like the Catholic Church and the Anglican Church very, very strongly against this bill, saying things such as, you know, this will open the floodgates to abortion. But over the weekend, the Uniting Church, one of the only mainstream church to break away from that. And their view is, they said very strongly that they believe that abortion should belong as a health procedure in a health act rather than the criminal code. So they were the first and so far really the only major church to break away and support this bill, although there is an Anglican minister in Newcastle who also kind of broke away from his church and said the same thing, that this is a social issue, not a criminal issue.
It's interesting. I heard a former Catholic priest on the radio yesterday saying that, in his view, Australians no longer take their opinions about moral decisions from the church, and therefore this is not a decision that the church should be leading. Why do you think it's come up now, Maria? I mean, we've had this debate in New South Wales 3 or 4 years ago. I don't know if the bill actually got to Parliament, but people were campaigning for it to get to Parliament. What's happened to make it come up now, do you think?
I truly do not know. I have a pet theory, which is probably not right, that New South Wales is a bit embarrassed that Queensland's done it and we're the lag in the Commonwealth. But I truly don't know how it has now become generally supported across the political divide in the way that it has. Can't explain it.
My own theory is that maybe, you know, women who prior to the federal election felt quite mobilised about women's issues, and then the federal election has passed, now those women are maybe coming together and getting more organised. I mean, you're a founder of Women Votes. Is this a big issue for your organisation?
It wasn't in the federal election, primarily because, of course, abortion is primarily a state-regulated issue, because it's a criminal issue at the moment, or it's an access to health care services issue. And so it wasn't a big focus for us in the federal election because federal involvement is only so tangential. But it's absolutely front of mind for women. And it's hard not to see a parallel with this issue and the marriage equality legislation. So there were very vocal opponents, generally of a sort of religious bent. But in fact, overwhelmingly, the population supported marriage equality, and abortion law reform is another one of those areas where there's a loud moral majority just inherently opposed to abortion. And then the community at large is overwhelmingly in favour of women having choice in terms of their own reproductive decisions. And I think it's a very similar situation. So maybe the same-sex marriage outcome has in fact, you know, made women bolder in terms of getting an outcome on abortion law reform in New South Wales.
Where does the Premier, Gladys Berejiklian, stand on this, Alex?
Well, this is interesting. So quite early in the piece, the Premier was asked whether she would support the bill. She said yes, she would, and if it contained what she believed it to contain, because I think at that point she just returned from overseas and hadn't looked at it closely, but she made it very clear she would support the bill. Over the last couple of days, it's become apparent that perhaps she would be quite keen to see some amendments, and I think that's definitely around the issue around the 22-week late-term abortions. And just now, just in the last hour or so, it's emerged, though, that the Premier does not intend to speak in Parliament and put her position out publicly, which I think will potentially be quite criticised, because the view of many people in the Parliament is it's a conscience vote, so you can vote in any way you want, but you get the opportunity and you probably should take the opportunity to stand up and at least explain why you're taking position, whether that be to support the bill or oppose the bill. The Premier doesn't intend to do that. And I do think that she will be quite criticised for that. She has every right to support the bill if that's still what she intends to do, and I'm sure it is, but I think a lot of people would like to hear why she feels that way.
Yeah. So just take us through the process. So it's now early afternoon on Wednesday afternoon, and the debate is raging at State Parliament right now.
That's right, yep.
How many people are many people speaking on it, and are many amendments being put up?
Yeah, at the moment we're still hearing from all the MPs that want to speak, and there's a lot. About 50 have indicated that they want to speak, and many spoke last night. They're going through them today. It'll continue for the rest of the day. I think the intention is for everybody who wants to speak today, and then the amendments will start tomorrow. They'll be introduced tomorrow and then voted on. There is a very big push for this to be finalised in the lower house this week, and that needs to be tomorrow because the house only sits till tomorrow. And then the upper house has already voted to hold a really short, sharp inquiry next week. It will be a week-long inquiry reporting by the 20th of August, so super quick. And that the idea of that is to inform the upper house members before it goes to the upper house for a vote. So it won't be finalised in any way this week, but perhaps in the lower house, and then it's still the upper house that has to kind of contend with it.
And what would that inquiry look like? What would they be looking at?
Well, it won't be like a lot of other parliamentary inquiries. Often they go for several weeks or months, take loads of submissions, have public inquiries. As it was explained to me, this will be the Social Issues Committee, and it will be quite factual. So it will deliver a report that says, these people say this, you know, this other group says this. It won't make recommendations. So you won't get a report that says the Social Issues Committee recommends that this bill be supported. It will just almost be a summation of everybody's view. People will be able to make submissions, but they'll have to be pretty quick and pretty succinct submissions, I suspect, so that the committee can report back by that August 20 deadline. And that is so then it can go to the upper house for a vote and be finalised, you know, by September at the latest.
So do you have any idea yet what some of the amendments that are going to be proposed tomorrow will look like?
Yeah. So there are a raft of amendments proposed by a backbencher, Kevin Connolly, and they are all around.
Is he from the government?
He's from the government. He's a Liberal backbencher, and he is doing these amendments on behalf of pretty much the Conservative bloc of Liberal MPs. They're around all sorts of things to do with, you know, that would lower the 22-week termination where it requires two doctors, bring it right back to less than 20 weeks. But probably more significantly are some amendments proposed by two senior government ministers, the Attorney General, Mark Speakman, and also the Planning Minister, Rob Stokes. And that is they're very interested in also the 22-week late-term abortion issue. What they want is rather than two doctors, and because their concern is, what are doctors? You know, are they not experts in this particular area? Go to a health advisory committee of a hospital. Now, as I understand it, the AMA feels that will just slow down the process. It's not necessary, and so they don't support that.
And also, anyone who's in a situation of having to make this decision of an abortion after 22 weeks is not having a great time anyway.
Yeah.
So the AMA would be concerned about putting them under more pressure?
And I think delays to the process. There was some talk that there would be like a 48-hour window where you would have to, it's almost, for want of a better term, a cooling off period. So you have 48 hours after making the decision before the termination happens. That won't go ahead because I think there's realisation that, you know, that would really impact rural and regional women who already have to travel great distances to have a termination, then having to come to, say, Sydney or another regional city. Very expensive and pretty traumatic. So it will really be around this 22-week aspect because that seems to be, listening to the debate, even people who are quite supportive of the bill and seem really uncomfortable about late-term abortions.
On that issue, presumably they're happening, not all the time, but presumably late-term abortions are happening in New South Wales for medical reasons, for the health of the mother or because the fetus is incredibly unwell. What legal situation are those people in at the moment? They're breaking the law, right? And the doctors are breaking the law to perform them?
They're not necessarily breaking the law insofar as the common law at the moment is to the effect that an abortion will be lawful for the purposes of that Crimes Act mechanic that we talked about earlier if a doctor honestly believes on reasonable grounds that the operation is necessary to preserve the woman involved from serious danger to her life or physical or mental health,
right,
which the continuance of the pregnancy would entail. So that would go to her medical, physical, emotional health. Actually wouldn't necessarily, at least on that excerpt protect, for example, if there was a second fetus that was at risk because of, you know, if there was more than one fetus.
So that's one doctor's opinion.
That's one doctor's
opinion.
And the
new legislation wants two doctor's opinions. So in a way, it's tightening it.
That's right. It is.
It is. And it's probably worth noting on this point as well that the legislation as proposed by Alex Greenwich is completely on all fours with the Queensland legislation, which was passed in 2018 and which hasn't, I think it's fair to say, obviously led to the floodgates being opened. And I think the critical point is here, nobody is going to lightly have an abortion after 22 weeks. And the figures on this are that overwhelmingly abortions are in fact performed or undertaken at the pre-14 week phase, actually. And the number at that after 22 weeks is incredibly small and, of course, in no doubt very trying circumstances already.
So just finally, Alex, what's your sense of where this is going? Do you detect a groundswell of support in the parliamentary chambers for this legislation?
Yeah, ultimately I do think so. I would be really surprised if it doesn't pass, but what it will do on the way through is cause a lot of angst, particularly in the Liberal Party room, because there are a lot of really angry people, angry mainly, not so much about the bill, but the fact that they felt that it was just sprung on them and emerged from nowhere.
Right.
So I think by late Thursday night, the bill will pass in some form, possibly with amendments, but not necessarily. And then I think it will pass the upper house. But it, as I said, it will cause a lot of pain on the way through.
Thanks to both of you so much for joining me today.
Pleasure. Thank you.
That was Alexandra Smith, the state political editor at the Sydney Morning Herald, and Maria O'Brien, the co-founder of Women Vote.
Kate McClymont here from the investigative team at the Herald. Much of what we do is giving a voice to the unheard and holding the powerful to account. Whether it's rampant underpayment in the fast food industry, sexual harassment in the entertainment world, or uncovering Australia's recycling crisis, our coverage proves the value of investigative journalism. Good reporting needs supporters. Subscribe today for just 50 cents a day. Just look for subscribe on any of our websites.
Okay, I'm joined now by Sydney Morning Herald health editor Kate Orbison. Kate, welcome to Please Explain.
Thanks very much.
How does one go about getting an abortion in New South Wales at the moment?
Well, there are two types of abortion you can get. You can have a medical abortion, which involves taking two pills over the course of about 36 to 48 hours. And also there's the surgical abortion, which I think is the one more people are familiar with. GPs can prescribe you the medical abortion, which is, as I said, one pill is mifepristone and the other misoprostol. The problem is GPs are operating in this grey area, which means some haven't done the training to be able to prescribe these pills, and some GPs who have done the training are too scared to, for fear of prosecution or even how they might be viewed by their colleagues. When it comes to the surgical termination, that's what's usually done after the 9 week marks.
Right. So are the medical ones more common early on?
Yes, that's right. So you can have a medical termination up to 9 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Then you tip over into the surgical abortions, which are, again, they're done through private clinics and also public hospitals, but it varies depending on where you live and what you can afford.
Yeah. So are the ones in private clinics expensive?
Very expensive. We think that it's very hard to tell because we don't have great data, but we think that the average cost of abortion in general in New South Wales is about $500, which is interesting considering that on the PBS, the pills actually cost under $40.
Right. So it'd be whatever it costs you to go to the GP and then the gap on the medication.
Yeah, well, it's you don't pay the gap. It's literally under $40 to get this pill. But the reasoning that clinics give is that it's sort of the wraparound costs of the checkups and the follow-ups. And look, if something goes wrong, it can be awful. It very rarely goes wrong, but they've got to cover their bases, and that's how they justify the cost. But some women we know pay thousands of dollars to access abortion in New South Wales.
And is that because there's no clinics nearby where they live, or?
That's usually the main reason. So it's a lot harder for women living in rural and regional areas to access abortion. It might take multiple trips to doctors. They have to travel interstate. They have to pay for accommodation. They might even have to pay for things you don't usually think about, like childcare. They might miss time off work. They might be in hospital for a couple of days. It's all those compounding costs that makes this more of an issue about inequity of access than this sort of blanket, you know, no one has access to abortion.
Okay. So I want to talk to you. We're going to steer clear of the politics and law on this debate because I've just discussed that. But I want to talk to you about this post 22 weeks period, which has become so contentious in the debate in New South Wales, because what this bill in New South Wales wants to do is to decriminalise abortion after 22 weeks with the permission of two doctors. What would be the typical grounds for an abortion after 22 weeks?
Well, the first thing to remember is it's not typical. These are the really rare cases. We know most abortions occur before 14 weeks. Once you get to...
And when you say most, do you mean like the vast majority?
Yes, we think between 91 and 95%.
Right, a lot.
A lot. When you get to past 20 weeks, we're looking at 0.7% to 2.8% of all abortions. So then when we get past 22 weeks, it's even rarer than that. In Queensland, they think it's 0.5% beyond 22 weeks. So when people talk about late-term abortions beyond that, we're talking about the minority of the minority. And it's usually a wanted pregnancy by that stage, which I guess is the really tragic thing about these terminations. The 22-week mark is there because, as you'd know, you usually have an ultrasound at around the 18 to 20-week mark, and that ultrasound is sometimes the first time, or usually the first time, we pick up on these genetic abnormalities that can be really severe, can be really devastating. It might mean that the mother will not be able to carry this baby to term. It might mean that the baby is not likely to live long at all once it's born. And these are agonising decisions for women to make. They're never made lightly. These aren't the arguments that people trot out about it being a flippant decision. It's a really gut-wrenching procedure as well.
Freaking out our listeners too much, can you tell us about what a woman goes through when she has a procedure like that physically?
Well, the thing that always sticks with me is it can take days. Right. So we're talking about going through a termination of usually a wanted pregnancy over days. And it's surgical, it's invasive.
It has to be done in a hospital, a late-term abortion?
Well, not only does it have to be done in a highly regulated clinical setting, it involves multiple specialties and multiple medics. This isn't the case of, you know, one doctor calling up a second doctor and saying, hey, I'm going to do this, can I get your consent? A lot of women have to go in front of an ethics committee at a hospital, which is, again, another traumatic aspect
to it. Oh, so that happens now?
It does happen now. It doesn't happen all the time,
right?
But it's not unlikely to happen.
Because that's one of the amendments. We are getting into the politics now, but instead of it being two doctors, some of the politicians want to make an amendment that it has to be an ethics committee at a hospital who makes the decision.
And I think it's unclear what that committee would look like. But yes, I mean, sometimes these ethics committees don't involve just doctors. They can involve a whole sort of range of people, and that can be incredibly upsetting.
So you have to go and make your case for why, or maybe your doctor would.
It's even more complex than that, in that you've probably spoken about it with Alex, but the Levine ruling, this ruling that allowed for loopholes essentially to access abortion, if the mother is in danger or her health or social or economic or medical circumstances are taken into account, this ruling does not take into account fetal abnormalities.
Right.
So if a woman goes in front of this ethics committee, often she has to essentially lie. She has to say, look, I can't go through this pregnancy.
Because this fetus is so damaged, it will damage me. That's, you know, instead of just being able to say this fetus won't become a viable human.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And a few women came forward in Queensland when they were looking at reforming their laws. And, you know, I dare you to read their their testimony.
I don't think I could.
It's really heartbreaking. So you've got that emotional anguish. You've got the physical aspects to it. It takes a long time to recover. I mean, think about recovering after a pregnancy, and you've got the joy of having a baby there. That's not a joy you have with these late-term abortions. And I do stress we're not talking about abortions up to the minute of birth or up to the day before
birth. So can we clarify this? Because people like Barnaby Joyce and Peter Dutton have talked about this law in New South Wales, proposed law change, allowing terminations up to live birth.
Yeah, so
is that practical?
No. I mean, I've spoken to family planning experts, the AMA, the peak obstetrics and gynecologist college, and they all say this is ludicrous. I mean, what doctors, what multidisciplinary team are going to allow this for any kind of flippant reason? I mean, these are decisions that not only the woman has to be okay with, and frankly, I mean, I don't think I've ever met a woman that would be okay with that.
No, who would voluntarily do this, no.
But the doctors have to be comfortable performing this as well. And this is something that it has been whipped up into such a frenzy over the last few days. All the doctors I speak to and all the women I've spoken to who have gone through late-term abortion, so that past the 22-week mark, say it's really insulting and it's really traumatising because you're questioning the love and the hope I had for the child I wanted, or you're questioning my ethical and my medical standing that you would think that we would allow such a thing to happen.
So just finally, in the practical delivery of abortion in New South Wales, what would change if this law were to pass?
So advocates say this is a first step. So by decriminalising abortion, you're removing that fear of prosecution, you're removing that grey area that doctors have had to operate in, and you're removing a lot of the stigma that women sometimes feel. The next step would hopefully be that safe termination of pregnancy would be more readily available through publicly funded clinics and services, because right now we're seeing an insane amount of inequity when it comes to terminations.
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining me, Kate.
Thanks very much.
Thanks to our Please Explain guests this week, Alexandra Smith, Maria O'Brien and Kate Orbison. As always, keep your topic suggestions coming through to the team via email. The address is in the show notes. Please Explain is brought to you by the newsrooms of the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age. Subscribers power our newsrooms. To support independent journalism, search subscribe Sydney Morning Herald or The Age. Thanks to our team behind this week's episode. Our producer-editors were Nicole Priestell and Debbie Harrington. Recordings by David McMillan. Amelia Maguire manages logistics and planning, and Tom McKendrick is our head of audio. I'm Tori. Thanks for listening.